So why is it that people that go to Israel are so dramatically impacted?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I'm sitting here in studio with one of my best friends in the world, Scott Volk. Scott's actually guest hosted a few times for me on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown, and we're going to take you to Israel today. Yeah, I know you'd like to go. You don't even have to have your bags packed. Just have your seatbelt fastened, and Israel, here we come. If you have a question, number to call 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. By the way, speaking of seatbelts, I had been flying continuously one trip after another, after another, after another, after another. And then I was home one night, and I was sitting in a recliner chair watching some sports. And when I went to get up, I reached to unlatch the seatbelt. Then I realized that there was no seatbelt on my recliner chair at home. But seatbelts fastened or not, Israel, here we come. Hey, Scott, great to have you on the air with me today.
Such a privilege, man. Thanks for having me on again.
All right. You have led numerous tours to Israel.
21.
You're kidding me.
No, can you believe that?
That's wild.
It's amazing. 21.
And when was your first?
My first one was in 2005, so I've done all that in about 12 years.
And when did it really pick up in terms of going even more frequently?
About 2010. Yeah, we ended up doing 5 trips last year alone.
You're serious?
Serious.
Oh, okay. I want to talk about the impact this has on other people, but this is an obvious question for me. You're on the tour. You're on the whole tour?
I'm on the whole tour.
You're on the bus every day, all
day. Every day on the bus.
You are sitting there listening to the tour guide talk about the historic sites and what's happening and different things like that.
Yeah.
All right. And you seem excited every time you go.
Well, I'm excited for a number of reasons. Not because I'm going to be seeing a site again as much as I'm going to be seeing the sight of the people who are seeing the sites. I get such joy in seeing people whose lives are changed and impacted when they go to Israel. I don't want to dummy it down too much, but when I bring my kids to Disneyland, I don't necessarily have an infatuation for Disneyland, but bringing your children.
Your kids are a little old now.
No, they're a little old
little
for
one,
Disneyland.
Little one.
That's
right.
True. But seeing their faces at Disneyland never gets old. Israel is much more than Disneyland, obviously. And I don't, I love going every year. It's an exciting thing to me to be in the land where Jesus lived and moved and where the Bible comes to life. But seeing people whose lives are impacted brings me so much joy that I don't think I'll ever get tired of going.
Yeah, five trips last year.
Five trips last year.
So all the travel, all the jet lag, all that, and still the excitement and the enthusiasm. And how many people, roughly, would you say you've brought on tours so far?
Roughly, well, you're a better mathematician than I.
So it's been 21.
Multiply 21 times an average of 40, so about 800 plus people.
All right, and have you seen that virtually all the time people come away really changed?
Of the 800 people, I've had one who came back and told me that they wish they did not go, and that's because he had a much different theological view of Israel than I did.
Right, and I know the individual. I'm surprised he even went.
Yes.
Actually.
Yes.
Yeah, and we did a tour a little under 2 years ago, and we've got one scheduled for next year.
Yes, we do.
And so I'll tell you more about that in a moment. But honestly, even though I knew it would be impacting for people, I was still shocked to see how impacted they were. And then to see now it's many months later, how much it's still a highlight to him, to them, how much it still impacted them. So when we come back, I want to talk about why is it that people are so impacted when they go on these tours. What's the common denominator? What seems to happen to them? And then I'll tell you about the tour that we'll be leading less than a year from now. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Join Dr. Michael Brown along with Messianic Jewish pastor Scott Volk for a unique behind-the-scenes tour of Israel, February 25th through March 6, 2017. Space is limited, so we're accepting applications on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information on the trip and to secure your spot, please visit our website at AskDrBrown.org and click on the Israel Tour banner or call our office at 704-782-3760.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, there is a lot going on politically. That's true. Primaries today, on the Republican side, Donald Trump expected to sweep the five northeastern states that are up for grabs. That's been expected for some time. And Senator Cruz expected to do better in states following that. And as best as we can see, neither one will have the majority needed, the 1,237 delegates that are needed. That's not an arbitrary number. That's half plus one. And neither one is expected to get there, which is why you do your best to recruit delegates that will be friendly to your cause. This is just what the campaigns do. So the first vote, all the delegates have to vote as required. So you won your state, you get the majority of the delegates or all the delegates on that first ballot, they vote for you. But if it doesn't reach 1237, now you go to a second and a third vote and they become unbound at certain points along the way. So if they wanted to vote for Trump, they could. If they wanted to vote for Cruz, they could, or whoever. It's just the way it's done. Nothing manipulative or dishonest about it, no matter how it's being portrayed. But right now, it looks like this could well go to a contested convention. And many are saying no matter which way it goes, it smashes the Republican Party. If Trump doesn't get the election, his people will walk out and many likely not vote. If Senator Cruz doesn't get it and Trump does, that many who don't like Trump might walk out. Either way, it's a very different, unusual time in history here in America. But I'll tell you what's always steady is Israel. And America's relationship with Israel is of critical importance. And that's why that's something I always look at when voting for a candidate. Where do they stand on Israel? And probably the most anti-Israel candidate we've had I can remember is Bernie Sanders.
Amazing.
Jewish candidate. All right, I'm sitting here with Scott Volk. We've got another tour planned, scheduled now for February 26th to March 5th.
February 25th
to March 6th. Sorry about it. As I said it, I knew it was too short. February 25th to March 6th. That's actually a teaching technique where you say it wrong, then people say, what's that? And then they get it right.
You're so brilliant.
But it often happens without me even planning it.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, it happens like that. But I want to be totally candid with you. When I've been asked over the years, am I going to lead a tour to Israel? I said, no, I go to Israel to minister, but not to lead a tour. And then finally enough people asked, and I thought, all right, it could really be impacting for them. It'd be a great time for me to connect with some of our supporters and friends of our ministry that I'd never get to connect with, have meals with, be at, you know, different points of the tour with, and hopefully raise some funds for our ministry as well. But I thought, let's do it. But when I looked at things, I thought, you know, it's a lot of money for people to go, and I know they're going to be impacted, but I don't know how impacted. Well, because I would care about people's money and finances. First, I started talking to other people with their tours and find out that we were priced way better. Mm-hmm. I was actually shocked at some of the differences. Secondly, I was shocked at the places we stayed and the quality of the food and the things like that. And then the quality of the tour overall was greater than I expected. So I'm thinking, man, if I do this again, I'm gonna push it more enthusiastically because I know what a great deal it is. But then to see the people impact, I knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
But I didn't expect it on that level. Mm. And I thought, boy, if I do this again, I'm going to tell everybody, you need to get there. Do what you can to get there, and you'll never be the same. So what are, okay, we went to the place where Jesus walked. And, you know, that could sound sentimental or emotional or nostalgic, but there's something that actually happens. And the Bible comes alive in different ways. Yeah. I mean, you've been with so many people, pastors, leaders, others. Right. What happens to people?
The common theme that I hear is that the Bible comes to life. Someone once described it as going from a old big black and white TV to a flat screen HD TV. It's like they never appreciated television. Now going to Israel and seeing the sites as they are and reading, opening up your Bible and even reading, you know, we just celebrated Passover, Jesus leaving the upper room, crossing the Kidron Valley to the Garden of Gethsemane. And you actually can be in Israel, cross that very same valley, be in the Garden of Gethsemane where we're sitting, and you realize this is the place where Jesus himself was. I think it was Neil Armstrong. He was the first guy that walked on the moon, wasn't
mm-hmm.
he?
Yeah.
I believe when he stepped on the southern steps of the temple where the 1967 when Israel recaptured Jerusalem, they unearthed the southern steps of the temple that was destroyed in 70 AD. I think it was Neil Armstrong who said, "I walked on the moon, but it does not compare to standing in this very place where
wow.
Jesus himself stood."
Wow.
So all that one can do is wonder. I see people's mouths open, their eyes wide open. Every place that we go has not only a significance in the natural, but also in the spirit. They're standing in places that the Bible talks about.
Yeah, and there's something about it that makes it more real.
Yeah.
You know, it's when I was in Holland some years ago and had a free afternoon, and one of my grads took me over to the city of Haarlem, where Corrie ten Boom's family was, where they had their watch shop downstairs and the house upstairs and the hiding place mm-hmm. where Jews were hidden during the Holocaust, which ultimately cost them their lives, the family, and Corrie ten Boom would have cost her life if not for God's miraculous intervention. And as the tour went on and we're walking around this, I started to get overwhelmed. And it seemed to be all Christian. The gal leading us on the tour
yes.
seemed to be almost like a younger Corrie ten Boom, maybe in her 50s or 60s, because we knew Corrie, you know, much older. And just, you know, godly Dutch woman with a great heart for the Jewish people and how sacred it was for them to pray for Israel as a family. And then we go up to the room and they've got the wall open. You can't believe that people actually live back there. And I became increasingly overwhelmed. And ultimately, they finished. I held myself together. And then she went just to talk to the people, kind of gave a little altar call to make sure everyone knew the Lord. And I just walked up a side stairwell and just sobbed. I was just convulsing and sobbing because of the reality. Mm-hmm. This actually happened. You could yeah. feel just something different. So the same way when you're in this place, or here's where David might have fought Goliath, or we're looking down at Armageddon,
yeah,
you know, and what Napoleon described as the perfect battlefield
yes,
or something like
yes.
that, suddenly you realize what happened in the past really happened. Well, we know that, but it becomes more real. And what's going to happen in the future
yes.
is really going to happen.
Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing experience. And all I can say is that there has been nothing that has given me more gratification in my walk with the Lord than the continual going. As somebody who's been over there 21 times, I pretty much know every site that we're going to, but I'm telling you, bro, it never gets old. And something has impacted me each trip in a different place. And even while you and I are talking now, I'm getting Facebook private messages from people who are on our last trip asking questions about can they go again. It's remarkable. I would be willing to give somebody a money back guarantee personally if they went to Israel and were not overwhelmed by all that it means to them.
Yeah, I think of when we were on Mount Carmel, and I gave a little teaching
yes.
about Elijah calling down fire from heaven.
Yes.
As I'm doing it, I'm thinking, oh, this happened.
Yeah.
He was a person
yeah.
just like us.
Yeah.
And in this location, it genuinely happened. And then when you see the different cultures, when you see, for example, the ultra-Orthodox Jews, now you can go to Brooklyn and being among communities with ultra-Orthodox Jews, but it's a different thing when you're there praying at the wall,
mm-hmm.
this place of many tears and place of intercession, and little holes in the rocks. People put a piece of paper, roll it up, and put their prayer requests in there. When you're praying in the midst of ultra-Orthodox Jews who are passionately praying for the redemption of Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
who are passionately praying for the coming of the Messiah, who are passionately praying for God's kingdom to come on the earth, I mean, it's overwhelming. For me as a Jewish person being there, and for those who've never touched it or been around it, And then you drive, you know, here you are, and here's a mosque, mm-hmm. and there are Muslims worshiping there. And it's, you know, you've got all these cultures merging together. For me, if I could spend all my days just walking around the old city of Jerusalem, I'd be quite satisfied just to live there and walk the streets and pray because of the phenomenal setting that's there.
And even just standing at the wall and praying, sometimes if you're there during the right time, you will actually hear the Muslim call to prayer over the loudspeakers in Jerusalem. So here you're at the holiest site in all of Judaism, the place closest to where people can get to where the Holy of Holies and the temple used to be. And you've got this, I want to say cacophony, that's a pretty big word, bro, but you've got this just noise of different religions and cultures. But you know that God has a specific plan and a specific purpose for Israel. So being there, you're actually standing in a place where prophecy is being fulfilled before our very eyes. God has brought his children back to the land of Israel, and we get to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, tell you more about this trip when we come back. Stay with us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Sitting here with my dear friend, Scott Volk. Scott and I have had this custom for years now where if one of us emails the other, it can be a one-page email that we'll just reply with one letter. An O or a T, meaning there's a typo in your email and you left out the T or you added the O or whatever, and you then have to go back and read that. We started to do it with someone else that was on our team once, and they requested that we not do that. They thought it was a little childish, but for us it was actually fun and kept us very sharp. So it's a good thing that Scott did not use the word cacophony, because that's not how it's pronounced. It's cacophony.
Yeah, but wait a second. I think it was less than a segment ago that you said it was a good teaching tool to say the wrong thing.
Exactly.
And that
you did it unconsciously like I did.
Learning.
Right, right. So, for those that want to use the word, it's cacophony. I actually thought it was cacophony. He thought it was cacophony. Mine was far closer. But I make mistakes like that all the time because I get everything by reading, like people's names in the news. A lot of times I don't know it because I don't hear it.
Right.
I just read it and I'll mispronounce it. As
right.
I have a guest coming on later, I'm trying to remember how to pronounce his name properly. All right. So in the cacophony of sounds, I do want to tell you, friends, with all seriousness, if you can join us on this trip. If you're one of our monthly supporters, you actually get a special discount. We just wanted to reach out and be a blessing to our torchbearers, our monthly supporters. But I really want to encourage you to give this serious prayer. And because space is limited, the sooner you get your application in to come along, the better. We encourage you to come, a group of folks from the same congregation, a whole family, individuals. Everybody's made it home. The singles, the individuals that come have a family before they leave. And that's really one of the sweetest things. I mean, I got to have meals with folks that I really wouldn't get to, got to be at different places. I'll tell you, for years, I was not into the whole thing about getting baptized in the River Jordan. Mm-hmm. You know, it's what are you doing that for? I never did it.
Yeah.
But baptizing people in the River Jordan
Pretty
was
cool,
a highlight.
Huh? Hey, listen, I'm going in November with my entire family, and my youngest, who is now six, Olivia, has asked if her two older brothers can baptize her in the Jordan River. I can't wait.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I can't wait.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for me, just seeing the way the Holy Spirit was there,
right,
identifying with what we did, mm-hmm. and the impact on the people as they were being immersed, each thing, every sight,
yes.
and then sensitivity to the needs in Israel. I mean, going behind the scenes with Israeli defense forces and seeing video that's not released to the public and how they go in and rescue someone who's been kidnapped. I mean, that was just amazing stuff. And then probably a big highlight for everyone was going to be with those underprivileged kids in Safat.
Yes.
And hanging out with them, playing a little soccer with them. They were so excited. They had songs prepared and food. I mean, it was unreal.
I think that's one of the strengths of our trips, bro, is that we get to do things. We will go to the sites, but we're really going to touch life.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get to go behind the scenes, like you said. And, you know, some people might say, well, you know, I don't agree with everything that Israel does. Therefore, I'm not going to go on a tour to Israel. But I would like to really challenge people with this. It's a great opportunity to see Israel with your own eyes rather than through the lens of news organizations, to rub shoulders with Arab believers and with Jewish believers, to hear the love that they have for one another,
mm-hmm.
and the love that they have for Israel that far transcends just patriotism.
Exactly.
It's something so much deeper. And I think that's really your heart too. Nobody on this trip is saying that Israel is perfect, but what we are saying is that God's promises for Israel are still true. And by being in the land together, our hearts, I really pray and believe, will be opened up to God's heart for Israel, which also means that their hearts will be opened up to the Arab nations as well.
Exactly. And many tours, Christian tours, go and see the holy sites, so-called holy sites and historical sites, but they don't connect, as one of our friends says, with the living stones, with the Messianic believers. So to go and be with Messianic Jewish leaders, to have special teaching, to pray together, things like that, I mean, that's always very, very special. And then look, God said he would scatter the Jewish people.
Yes.
God said he would regather.
Yes.
It's happened.
It's happened.
You can't deny it. If he scattered, no one can regather.
That's right.
There we are in the land with this living reality that God keeps his promises.
That's right. We're looking at the Bible through a biblical lens as opposed to a political lens. So when we're over there, we will be getting biblical paradigms, not CNN paradigms, of what's really going on in Israel. And I believe that our biblical lens and viewing Israel through the biblical lens will really give us a basis for even understanding the politics of Israel.
Yeah, and then when you realize the constant pressure of radical Islam surrounding Israel,
yes.
Israel's doing its best to keep its people safe and to dwell in peace with its neighbors as well.
Yes.
That's impacting. And you'll see when you're looking at a historical site, you'll see in English, then in Hebrew, then in Arabic.
Yeah.
They'll have the descriptions, and they want to honor the Arabic speakers as well and those with that history. And, you know, just one other thing, one of the remarkable things is I'm thinking of one of those sites, and you're in the museum with some of the ancient artifacts and stuff like that, that you're walking by the steps that would have led up to the Temple Mount before, and you've got, you know, what's this where you walk down? And what's this over here? Well, that's one of the many baptismal pools.
Amazing. Yeah.
For ritual immersion.
Right.
So when thousands come to faith in Jesus the Messiah at Shavuot, Pentecost, after Peter preaches, there were ample places for them to be immersed.
Incredible.
Right there. And they could have been in one of those places.
It's absolutely incredible. Really, really phenomenal. I'm so glad I got to experience it with you. You've been there many, many times. You've done some teachings from there that are videoed. One of the things that I think will be really impacting too for the people who are coming is we're going to visit a Messianic congregation. I think you'll be speaking there. We're trying to get that worked out. We'll visit with Arab believers. People who come to me, you are just a man, but you're also the man behind the microphone on this broadcast. And I just can't think of a better opportunity for the listeners of Line of Fire to be able to get to know you outside of the context of this show, but within the context of Israel and your calling. Come and join us. We have our meals together. We ride on the bus together. You're going to be speaking in many, many places, and it's just a great opportunity to hang out and to spend time together.
And what we also did is, because I did live broadcasts from Israel, we had folks sitting in.
Live audience.
I interviewed them. But I remember one of the places everybody squeezed. It was just a real sweet family thing, taking a walk together,
yeah.
A beautiful night, setting up there, setting up our studio, doing the broadcast, everybody in it together,
yeah.
And then going back. So just lots of special things that we do. Check it out. It will be February 25th to March 6th. So that's less than a year from now. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R-Brown, AskDrBrown.org, and you'll see a banner, first or second banner that'll come up on the homepage. Click on that. That'll tell you everything you need to know, and the sooner you get your deposit in, the better.
And there's actually an incentive for those who sign up before Friday at midnight. They get $50 off the registration fee.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Check it out. AskDrBrown.org. Now is the time. Hey, next year in Jerusalem.
Amen.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, yesterday I took a call towards the end of the show, and the phone lines had been jammed the first hour. We were talking about presidential elections and the sovereignty of God. Is it God that determines who's elected? Do the people determine? Is it a combination of both? We had great discussion, lots of good insights. In the second hour, we were talking about whether it's right for Christians to boycott other companies. Is it appropriate? How do we feel when that's done by those with different ideologies? How does this relate to our larger spiritual concerns? Great lively shows. The phones are ringing off the hook, many unable to get through. And, of course, many that over the course of the 2 hours we were unable to get to directly. But we just would take them as they came in. And I try to get to those who had been holding the longest, and then got to a gentleman named Patrick who identified as homosexual, but wanted to address what he felt were larger issues with HB 2, the bill that North Carolina passed and Governor McCrory signed that is getting such attack from corporate America and from different entertainers and things like that, even pressure from the NBA. Yesterday at a rally in Raleigh, on behalf of HB 2 and supporting the governor and the legislators, I've read that over 4,000 showed up in support, maybe several dozen in protest. Of course, the media focuses on the several dozen protesters, but I remember that from Right to Life marches in D.C. when I lived right outside of D.C. in Maryland in the mid-1980s, late 1980s, that there'd be a march, and it could be a few hundred thousand people marching for life on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, and literally 10 protesters on the side of the road, and they would interview two protesters, and they would interview two pro-life people, and you'd get the idea that you had a few of each there. And, you know, we saw that for years. So no surprise when the media reports like this, but the governor and the legislators, they see where the support is. They see where people are coming from and standing with them. Well, a gentleman called, and he wanted to draw attention to other issues he had with the bill. And I said, tell you what, we're out of time. And he said, well, you had time for others. How about for me? I said, well, plenty we didn't get to, and there are people after you that we can't get to. I said, but why don't you call? I really want to have this conversation. Can you call back tomorrow? And he said he could. I said, how about 2:30? And he said he could. Now, maybe he got tied up. Maybe something else has come up. Maybe he's chosen not to call. But in any case, I told Howard today, screening calls, look for Patrick. I believe Patrick from Raleigh. Look for him. So we're still looking. We are still looking. By the way, last week I was scheduled to have a friendly online debate with an atheist who wanted to defend the Quran, and who said that the verses of violence are being misinterpreted, that the Quran is being misinterpreted and misused, and that really, when rightly understood, those verses do not support violent acts today. Well, I thought that's a great argument from an atheist whom you'd expect to bash the Quran. So we had it all set up. We announced it. I saw this gentleman announced it on his Facebook page and never called. We were leaving him voicemails. I messaged him privately, messaged him privately on Facebook during one of the breaks, never heard back. And then after the show, I get a note from him, shouldn't your office be calling me now? I said, buddy, that was an hour ago. And he was in Arizona. And in Arizona, the time stays the same when we shift forward or backwards, when we gain an hour, when we lose an hour. Arizona time stays the same. He thought we were at a two-hour time difference, not a three-hour time difference. So we're hoping to reschedule. I told him, not a problem. It can happen. We're hoping to reschedule. But as for Patrick, maybe he'll call later, but later I may not have time to talk because I've got guests coming. We'll be right back.
Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to the line of fire, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society and chaos in the church, all too often in compromise. 866-34-TRUTH, the number to call. Last year, some of our team members, this is a few years back. Some of our team members went to downtown Durham after the Pride Festival at Duke University. This was September 28th, 2013. And they're talking to young people there about LGBT issues. Some very, very interesting responses. First on gender. Well, they're really on gender identity. Let's listen to clip number one.
What defines your gender identity?
I think it's what you believe in your mind to be.
Personal opinion.
Your attraction.
So and biology, it's not necessarily related.
Yeah, no,
absolutely.
Okay.
So biology is not necessarily related to gender. I mean, that's where we're at now. And it would be one thing if that was just someone's personally held position. But it's another thing entirely when now everyone is supposed to accept that. In other words, based on what are you telling me that I need to accept someone's gender identity or whatever identity they have? If there was, say, a minority hiring, that there was a disparity percentage-wise between hiring of blacks and whites. Let's say blacks made up 30% of the population, but whites had 95% of certain jobs, even though they were equally qualified. You say, well, that's a disparity. That's a disparity. And sometimes there's affirmative action to correct that. We need to balance that out. We need to make sure there are more opportunities. We're talking about people who are equally qualified for the same job. Well, if I, as a white man, went in there and said, like Rachel Dolezal, to the core of my being, I identify as black. That's how I perceive myself. That's how I see myself. Should they then be obligated to say, okay, well, then we give you the job? Well, how does that help the person who really is black? I, as a white man, get their job because I identify as black. What if I genuinely meant it, genuinely felt it? So, how does that affect things? It doesn't. It doesn't. Yet when it comes to gender, we're told whatever someone perceives, even if it switches by the day, even if it switches by the hour, even if someone is totally gender fluid, even if someone identifies with multiple genders or with no gender, we must accept that. There's someone in Australia, I forget if it was male to female or female to male, but the person had sex change surgery only to discover that really that wasn't who they were either. So they wanted to register as having no gender. And if I remember this correctly, Australia for the first time said officially, okay, you can register as having no gender. We're just supposed to accept this. And of course, biology, the packaging, it's a boy, it's a girl. No, that's utterly irrelevant. Clip number two, again, some of our team talking to young people in downtown Durham after the Pride Festival at Duke University, September 28th, 2013.
The hospitals choose your gender for you immediately after you're born because they wrap you in a blue blanket or put a blue hat on you. But that's your sex, but that's not necessarily your gender.
Ah, all right, so they get the sex right. They can see, okay, that's a boy, that's a girl, that's your sex. But now they put a blue hat on you, that's now gender. Now, some are upset that you're even assigned anything at birth. That's how they put it, assigned. You're assigned this at birth. It'd be better to say, we don't know if you're male or female. We know biologically what you are, but we don't know if you're really male or female until you develop and identify. So why even identify either way? I mean, that's the social madness. I had a gentleman tell me a couple of years ago, had a gentleman tell me that it was last year, that it is primitive what they do in the hospitals to base gender and sex on biology and chromosomes is primitive. because, as they'll often tell us, gender is not what's between your legs, but what's between your ears. Well, then if it's what's between your ears, and there's no absolute scientific method, in fact, very, 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 very few actually have chromosomal tests to see if they're male or female chromosomally, because that doesn't matter. If they are, they're not. They're still going to identify. And very, very, very few are going to have extensive brain scans and things like that. And even so, that doesn't prove anything. That doesn't prove anything. In other words, the brain has what's called plasticity. So over a period of time, if you focus on one thing, you give your attention to one thing, that can now adjust your brain. In other words, a larger part of your brain is devoted to that. So it's not just, well, you focus on that because a larger part of your brain was already doing it. But no, by doing it, you shift that. And the example I always give, it's to me kind of the cutest, and having just been in London, I can tell you it's amazing, is that cab drivers in London, they're required to know the map of London, basically in their head. Cab drivers in London, when they were tested, had a larger navigation part of their brain than your average person. In other words, the brain was devoting more energy to that. Just like someone who's blind is going to have a better sense of touch and a better sense of hearing than your average person. Someone who went blind, over a period of time, the resources in their brain that were once devoted to that, something happens to their eyes, they can't see, those resources now can be designated for something else. So it ultimately comes down to someone says, I perceive I am this. I perceive I am this. So you just have to accept it. And the whole world has to accept it. It is cultural madness. Well, we haven't heard from Patrick, but we'll go to the phones. Kernersville, North Carolina. Cynthia, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, a question. What recently with the HB2 in North Carolina, I've been supporting that bill and encouraging the legislatures to stand firm on that and the governor. And yesterday, we found out that the United Methodist Bishop in Western North Carolina Conference and the North Carolina Conference sent a letter to the legislature. It was very broad and encouraged them to repeal the bill, which I'm against, but I'm a lifelong Methodist.
Yep.
So it's very concerning for me. This hasn't really been mentioned up to this point. They may have had some discussions that were not public, but I don't know about those. So now my husband and I are really concerned about whether we stay where we are, whether we find another church that's going to stand for what we believe, or, and I've just gone back and forth on this.
Yeah, well, why did you support the bill in the first place?
Well, for one thing, to begin with, when it came out in Charlotte a year ago and then again this year, we have family in Charlotte. We were very concerned for our mothers, our sisters, our granddaughters, and they're in and out of Charlotte a lot, and I felt like, this is not a good thing to have bathrooms open to anybody can walk in.
How about locker rooms?
Locker rooms are even worse. I have a 10-year-old granddaughter, and she doesn't even understand any of this stuff right now that's going on, and we're, trying to decide how do we approach these things with her.
Right.
That was the reason I supported the bill to begin with.
All right. And what if we just focus on the bathroom part, because that's
the biggest part.
Locker room. So the what Charlotte passed basically rendered the public bathrooms and locker rooms in the city gender neutral.
Right.
So what's actually happened, I have people that write to me and tell me these things have happened to their family. So you can be, say, in Washington State, where you have a law like this. And the YMCA, your 15-year-old daughter comes out of the shower stall. She's got a towel wrapped around her. She's now going to walk out to the locker room and get dressed. And there's a guy sitting there on his cell phone. And he said, I can do this because of the laws. And no one could kick him out. That's obscene. It should be criminal. Common sense would tell you it should be criminal on every level. Yet you have laws, say in California, that they require it. Any child can play on if one sport's open, to boys, has to be open to girls. And if the boy identifies as a girl, he can play on the girls' sports team and use the girls' locker room. This is cultural insanity.
Right.
And there is no possible Christian reason to say that you should make the bathrooms and locker rooms gender neutral. None whatsoever. So tell you what, I've got a break here. I want to hear what your bishop had to say. The fact of the matter is, though, that the United Methodist Church is increasingly liberal. It's still divided over the issue of same-sex, quote, marriage, but it continues to go in a liberal direction. And even as a lifelong Methodist, Cynthia, if you can find a Methodist church that preaches the gospel and stands for righteousness, great. But if the Methodist Church leaves you, you can't stop them.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us. Michael Brown, joyfully here, serving as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. So back to Cynthia in Kernersville, North Carolina. So what were your bishop's main reasons for asking the governor and legislators to overturn or repeal HB 2?
Well, I think it was very broad what they've asked. There's 8 bishops, I think, that signed this letter, some retired bishops, but they're, and I was trying to find my article here because I speak wrongly. But mainly, there's dissension within the church. We want to listen to each other. I found it here. This was posted yesterday. A more excellent way, they're calling it, grace and peace to you. We share your deep concern in regard to increasing the divisive nature of life in North Carolina. We urge United Methodist people to cultivate community that is welcoming and nurturing to all. And they quote John Wesley.
Listen.
May not think alike, but that we do love alike.
Right. So here's the thing. No one is stopping a church from loving those who identify as LGBT.
Right.
No one is stopping the church from serving them. Nobody's stopping the church from reaching out to them. Nobody's stopping the church from sharing the gospel with them. Nobody's stopping the church from loving your neighbor as yourself. We're simply saying that we don't want special categories like sexual orientation and gender identity that can be used as weapons against Christians to discriminate against Christians, as is happening around the country with the courts regularly deciding in favor of gay activism, to the point that once you write this into law in your state, the way that these bishops would want it written into law in the state, once you do that, you now open the door wide for persecution of Christians. And the idea that John Wesley, with his high moral code, his strong teaching of holiness, the ethics that he promoted, that he would say, oh, sure, we should be embracing of practicing homosexuals. Look, he addressed this because he wrote a commentary on the New Testament. He addresses these moral and cultural issues, not the same as we're facing today, but same human nature. And he's crystal clear about where he stands on sexual purity. So if you want to quote John Wesley, quote him holistically. But Cynthia, I can assure you, as far as pastors and leaders and bishops, these Methodists are quite in the minority. I can also assure you that all over North Carolina, the churches that for the most part are thriving, the churches that are growing, the churches that have the healthiest, most committed membership, on average, are the churches that really believe the Bible to be true and that hold to biblical morality and a biblical definition of marriage and family. And the churches that are losing their members most rapidly, the churches that are hemorrhaging, are the churches that are compromising. They are watering down the word so as to accommodate the world. They are becoming like the world to win the world, which is basically like becoming an alcoholic to reach alcoholics. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
We have cultural sensitivity but we become like Jesus to win the world. So it is painful. I don't want to downplay the fact that you've been a lifelong Methodist.
Right.
The fact is, I'm sure the church has changed a lot over the years.
Right.
And the question is, where is Jesus right now? He's obviously wooing people back and calling them to repentance, but I can almost guarantee you that this bishop does not hold to the full and absolute authority of Scripture the way Wesley would have, and that this bishop would say, look, certain things have to be reinterpreted or understood differently. And the bottom line is, the most loving thing you could do is tell the truth. When a doctor tells you, look, you're going to have to change your diet and lifestyle, or you could have a heart attack, that's love speaking. When you tell two men or two women who are romantically and physically involved, your love may be real and your commitment to each other may be real, but this is not what God calls marriage. It may be painful, but it's true, and love speaks the truth. So, Cynthia, I would encourage you to talk to your pastor.
Right.
If he steadfastly opposes this letter and is standing for the truth, well, that's part of the Methodism. You're going to have differences within the congregations.
Right.
If he has now taken on the stance of agreement with this letter, then this may be the Lord telling you, hey, they moved on without you and without me, so let's let's move on somewhere together.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome, and hopefully your pastor is a godly man that wants to do the right thing. All right. Thank you so much, Cynthia. Hey, look. I understand that Christians do not want to look and feel like the religious police. I understand that. I was watching a documentary about Saudi Arabia, and you have the religious police. They'll walk up to a woman in a mall. You're wearing makeup. You shouldn't be wearing makeup. They will clear out the cafe. It's prayer time. Everybody needs to go pray. That's not what we're trying to do. We're not telling everyone you have to come to church on Sunday. We're not telling everyone you have to stop and read the Bible now. We're not telling anyone you can't go in the bar and get drunk. We're not telling anyone, God, you know, sir, you can't go home and sleep with your girlfriend. Those acts are not breaking a law, and they're between those individuals and God. However, we would encourage the police to enforce the law, and if someone is obviously drunk while driving, we'd want them pulled over. We don't want them on the road because it now affects others. When you want to redefine marriage and say that we have to embrace it and celebrate it and participate in it, if we're a baker or a florist or whatever, well, now that infringes on us. When you say if someone identifies as a woman, even though they're clearly a biological man, they can use the ladies' locker room at the YMCA, well, now that affects our wives, our daughters, our granddaughters, our sisters. That affects us. And therefore, we take stands. At the same time, we reach out with love to everyone. All right, friends, let me encourage you to get involved. Go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Get informed. Check out my latest videos. Check out my latest articles. Check out any of the broadcasts that you missed. Check out this week's special resource offer, which features my Jeremiah commentary and some exclusive resources that we have that we're packaging with it. And check out our Israel tour. Talked about it the first half of this hour with my friend and colleague Scott Volk that will be leading the tour with me. That's next year. And trust me, it's here before you know it, February 25th to March 6th. All that info is right on the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Pray for us. We are on the front lines. Share our posts, our articles, the information that we put out with others. Let us be your voice. Let us communicate things with clarity for you in a way that thankfully we have a great platform you can share now with others, and help us with your finances. We're on the air through your donations. You can do all that at AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, I'm not upset with the world being dark. That's what the darkness does. It grieves me when the church goes dark. You think it's crazy where you live? You need to know what's happening in California.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to the broadcast. 866-348-7884, the number to call. This is Michael Brown. I am delighted and blessed to be with you. I've got a special guest. He's going to be talking about California in a moment. Some things that are happening that are of importance to us around the country. And I'm just looking at a poll I did yesterday. Let's see here. After 8 years with President Obama, is the Church of America more awake or asleep? Now, why did I do that? Why did I present that question? It wasn't to bash President Obama. You know my profound differences with many of his policies. That was not the purpose. People were calling my show yesterday. The first hour, we talked about the sovereignty of God and elections. When someone is elected president of the United States, can we say, well, that was God's will? President Obama was elected because it was God's will. President Bush was elected because it was God's will. President Clinton was elected because it was God's will, etc. And therefore, whoever ends up as president, say out of the four remaining primary candidates, Sanders, Clinton, Cruz, Trump, whoever's elected, it's God's will. Or is it our will because God has put us in a country where we can vote? Or is it a combination of both? Well, we had a really healthy, interesting discussion on this. But the one thing that came out of this that I thought was really, really interesting was quite a few suggested, and this is social media too, these suggestions, quite a few suggested that perhaps we will have a president that will not be in harmony with our views and our values. We will have a president that will turn us even more in the wrong direction on moral and cultural issues, and perhaps with Israel too. But that's what it's going to take for the church to wake up, that things are going to have to get worse before they get better. Is that possible? Of course it's possible. It's certainly possible. And it may just be that that's the direction we're heading. In other words, we're steering in the wrong direction. So because of the way we're steering, things are going to get worse before they get better. And maybe if we hit enough bumps in the road and the road is collapsing under us, we'll realize, okay, get off this road, try to turn around. We're going in the wrong direction. What's interesting, though, is the responses I got to this poll. Now, this is just opinion. This is just opinion. And I have to really analyze this before I can give you my opinion. But here is my poll question. After 8 years with Obama, is the Church of America more awake or asleep? Well, 16% said they didn't know. Only 21% said more awake. 63% said more asleep. Now, again, it's just a poll. It's just a few hundred votes, not even 400 votes yet. And it's just representative of a little cross-section of my Twitter following, which is only 20-something thousand people. We've got, 18 times more than on Facebook. But it's easy to do a poll on Twitter, and I like just to get feedback from folks that follow me there. But if that's true, if it is true that we are more asleep now than when President Obama came in, with the radical cultural shifts, some of which he's helped drive forward himself, aggressively so, outspokenly so, if after 8 years with President Obama, if true, we're more asleep than awake, I'm not convinced that's the case, but many feel that is the case, then what makes us think we'll be more awake if we had 4 years or 8 years that were even worse when it comes to moral and cultural issues? Something to think about, isn't it? 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be right back. We're going to go to California.
Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, a lot of things happen first in California in terms of certain radical activism, in terms of certain bills that get passed, in terms of things that get brought into the schools. And because of that, being the case, what happens in California often spreads throughout the nation. For example, in California, if you have certain things that are taught in the schools, because it's such a big state, populace-wise, it's the biggest state. Well, textbooks are going to be printed for California, but do you think they're just going to be printed for California alone? Are they going to be exclusively for California? The answer is, in many cases, no. These textbooks will now be used around the nation. And when a bill gets passed in California, it's often just a precursor to what happens in other parts of the nation. And that's why we often focus on these things, even though I'm not in California, and most of you listening are not in California, or all over America. And there are folks who've been on the front lines with the moral and cultural issues that affect especially California, among other states across the country, but particularly in the West. And Pacific Justice Institute is leading the way in the fight for righteousness, for sanity, for common sense, for the rights of Christians, for the rights of moms and dads and kids of conservative moral persuasion. And I'm thrilled to have Brad Dacus with me again, leading the Pacific Justice Institute, the president of Pacific Justice Institute, as we talk about some of the things going on in California. Brad, welcome back to The Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, great to be on the program. Thank you.
Brad, from your vantage point in California, where so many of these things are kind of cutting edge, for better or worse, as you look at the landscape now in America, if you look at, say, what's happening with Target and things like that, does any of this surprise you, or have you been dealing with these things in your state for years already?
No, it does surprise me. It really does. How quickly we're seeing things change when this issue of boys going to girls' locker rooms and showers and bathrooms first came out. That was just recently. This is not, you know, it has not been around a long time. You know, the polls showed people were just outraged, even in California, about it. The overwhelming majority were getting petitions to try to get it on the ballot, to get it reversed. And then we start seeing it escalating real quickly on a national level with the Obama administration directing the Department of Justice, Department of Education to give ultimatums to public schools, saying they can't receive Title I money unless they let boys go into girls' bathrooms and locker rooms. And then we see companies, large companies like Target, choosing to do something that just a very short while ago was thought of as absurd, which is allowing men to go into women's restrooms.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I've known things like this were coming for years, warned about them for years, and yet the rapidity of change,
right,
the fact that things have shifted so dramatically, so quickly. When it comes to transgender issues, do we even have clear parameters, scientific guidelines, legal definitions that we can work with other than I perceive myself to be a man trapped in a woman's body?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I researched this, and there is a very rare condition where someone can have two X and one Y chromosome and can create some issues as adrenum insensitivity syndrome, another very unusual condition. But the overwhelming percent, 99% of those we call transgenders, they're people who have just a mental condition, gender identity dysphoria. Dysphoria meaning you're thinking if something's real, it isn't. Like you think you're a dog and you're really not a dog, you know, so it's dysphoria. So this is a real mental condition in the DMS-4, DMS-5 book manual. So, but it's nothing, there's absolutely nothing biological, medical to justify. It's a mental condition. In fact, John Hopkins University, their medical school, has discontinued all sex change operations. And the reason is because they've assessed it and they've discovered that this a surgical approach to this mental condition does not reduce depression, does not reduce attempted suicides or suicides. It does not actually help the person in terms of a quantitative measurable ways. So they've cut it off completely, and I think other hospitals, I think, will do the same as hopefully as they begin to realize the foolhardiness and the danger to so many people to entertain this route of medical drastic medical change of cutting off human organs that are not hurting the body.
Yeah, Johns Hopkins did this some decades back under the leadership of Dr. Paul McHugh when he realized he tracked the people. And he saw that, yes, on a certain level, some of their issues were resolved, but the fundamental issues that they had and the fundamental confusion and other deeper things going on, those things remained. And Dr. McHugh made the statement, we don't give liposuction to an anorexic. And that's the whole thing. The perception is obviously not reality, where the rubber meets the road. When you go into the doctor's office and they say male or female, they're asking for a reason. They want to know biologically, what are you? So we have compassion on those who have a biological or chromosomal disorder. But in the vast, vast, vast majority of cases, as you say, no one is going. Bruce Jenner has no evidence with all right. the money he has that he has a chromosomal issue or a biological issue. I don't know if he even tested for it. No one's even asking for a test. No one's asking for a five-year-old in school in kindergarten to be tested other than Johnny says he's Jane. So Jane goes to the girls' room.
Right.
And here's what I've seen happen also, that you have a school that tries to accommodate. I just read a pro-transgender article saying if you got 2,000 students in the school, you might have 2, 3, or 4 who identify as trans. So obviously you don't turn the whole school upside down for them unless you got the crazy agenda going on. So
what I've seen
now is that, let's say the school says, okay, we have a faculty bathroom. It's just single stall. You can just go in there. It's one person at a time. So little Johnny, who identifies as Jane, can use that. The parents have said, no, that's discriminatory. He needs to use the girls' room. So even when you present a compassionate solution, that's not good enough. So everyone else has to be inconvenienced.
Right. And there is impact and effect on girls, for example, when they, in a locker room, they have a high anxiety that any moment a teenage boy could come in and look at them or can take off his clothes in front of her. And also we have to recognize that gender identity dysphoria, along with sexual orientation, I know some people on the left are going to scream and yell when I say this, but studies show that there is a degree of fluidity. Even the American Psychiatric Association recognizes there's some degree of fluidity with sexual orientation. Well, definite fluidity with regards to gender identity. Gender identity is something that kids work through and resolve, and it's a continual process all the way up into adulthood to varying degrees. Even a transgender activist that I spoke with once for a good long while, he acknowledged, he said that, 70% of kids in elementary school who have gender identity dysphoria work through it and no longer have the dysphoria by the time they grow up without any counseling, involved, just on their own. Well, then why is it that we're making counseling illegal for this in the state of California and Illinois and New Jersey? It is insane that counseling should be prohibited for those who want to work through their gender identity dysphoria in a constructive, remedial way.
Yeah, and 70%, that person was even giving a low estimate.
Right, and he's an activist on the other side too. He's not on my side.
But you're going to make it a lot harder if you dress Johnny as Jane for years.
Yes.
And then you put Johnny on hormone blockers and all this. But think of it, in your state, California, so Johnny's parents can come in. Johnny's 8 years old. He's diagnosed with gender dysphoria. And now they say, okay, in a year or two, we want to start to put him on hormone blockers to stop the onset of puberty. And then when he gets a little older, we want to talk about sex change surgery when he's in his later teens, then hormones for life. That's perfectly legal. But if Johnny's parents go in there and say, Johnny's struggling with his gender identity, he thinks he's a girl, and we want to help him be at home in his body, that's illegal. I mean, it's insanity.
Right. And I think what people need to realize is those who do have, who are transgender, who have the surgery, the average transgender who makes that change hormonally and all will not live to see their 30th birthday. That's how high the suicide rate is. So parents who are making these decisions, instead of having their children work through their gender identity issues constructively, instead placating to it, complicating it, expounding upon it, by what you just described, they're really likely as basically signing the death warrant for their child, and it's very, very sad because they're really not looking at the big picture down the road. Also, I think it's important to note that because many people have the false assumption, they think, well, if someone has generated dysphoria, it's a man who thinks he's a woman, therefore he's probably gay, and he probably likes men, doesn't like women because he thinks he's a woman. That's a big, big fallacy. Multiple studies, I've done my research on this, every single one of them shows that the majority, I repeat, the majority of such men are actually heterosexual and their sexual desires are stimulated by women.
Yeah, Bruce Jenner is still attracted to women. All right, we come back a few more minutes with Brad Dacus. I want to focus on AB 1266, what this means in the schools and what the people of California are doing about it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown here speaking with Brad Dacus, the president of the Pacific Justice Institute. And Brad, you'd mentioned gender dysphoria in DSM-4, so kind of the Bible of psychiatry diagnosing mental illnesses. We had what was called gender identity disorder, and because of heavy lobbying from trans activists, that got changed to gender dysphoria, and now we're in DSM-5. Now we're told that it's not a disorder of any kind. It's almost like I hold a gun to your head and say, tell everyone I'm a nice person, and then I said, see, he said I was a nice person. So there's this tremendous pressure from activists so that we can't even say, let's help you with your problem. No, this is something to be celebrated. But when it comes to kids, I think everybody sees the absurdity of this. So AB 1266, it's been the law. It's been taken advantage of with boys using the girls' locker room and things. What was that statute about? What's actually happened? And what are you doing to fight that?
Yeah, it's a very serious statute. It says that every public school must allow the boy to be able to use a girl's bathroom or in junior high and high school, even the locker room and showers, along with the girls, and vice versa. For girls using the boys' locker room, we've actually had that happen down in Carlsbad, California. Mm. But and they have to allow it, and all that's required is for the boy, for example, to say that, to declare that he feels inside, that he feels like he's a girl or a female that day, that moment. And then he's immediately entitled. He doesn't have to wear lipstick and dress a certain way. He just declares it, and he's legally entitled to go into the opposite sex restroom, locker rooms, and shower with the girls. He can't be. The law is very, very radical in this regard, and it's created tremendous anxiety and apprehension for so many people. And that's why we worked with the coalition to have a petition for an initiative to get on the ballot to have this reversed. By the people of California. We had enough signatures, but the state of California has invalidated enough of the signatures that it kept us, we fell just 18,000 short after they invalidated over 120,000. And they had bogus reasons, like, you know, if you printed the name and address of your spouse and had your spouse sign, then both signatures were invalidated. If you're an elderly person and your signature looks different than when you last registered to vote, then your signature was invalidated. And, of course, that disenfranchised so many elderly whose signatures changed with their eyesight and other things. So we did our homework. We found out if those had not been invalidated, we would have definitely had enough signatures to get this on the ballot. And so we're now litigating this as we speak in court with the Pacific Justice Institute.
Yes, shades of what happened in Houston when the city attorney invalidated signatures, and then thankfully it got on the ballot, and despite a heavy lobbying in the other direction, common sense prevailed in Houston. People say, well, nothing's ever going to happen. It was only a matter of months that this was in effect last year when a boy who had played ninth grade baseball, now in the 11th grade, identified as a girl and was on the girls' softball team. So aside from the competitive issue that you have biological males now competing with biological females and the unfairness that that brings, you now have a biological male in sharing a locker room, sharing shower stalls with young ladies. I mean, what is the rationale behind this? how is it that you've got people voting for this in your houses of legislature there? What are they thinking?
Yeah, and most of those boys, I want people to remember, most of those boys statistically are turned on by looking at the girls. They're dressing and showering and being naked. So this isn't, you know, just this is real. It's a real serious issue that girls and females in these locker room showers are very reasonable and rational to have anxiety and about being visually violated by someone from the opposite sex. As far as the legislature goes, they are overwhelmingly in favor of this. The not just the Democrats, but the liberal far left Democrats are totally, they're in control of the state legislature, the state senate, the state assembly in California. They are under the bequest of the LGBT movement. They control these candidates, these politicians, with large sums of money. And a lot of these Democrats are elected in low income areas, minority areas. They don't listen to their constituents. They listen to where their money comes from, and it comes from the gay lesbian lobby. And so so there's a real major disconnect with regard to these legislators and even their own constituents, who the majority of would not be in favor of this.
Mm. Is there a growing conservative population in California, perhaps growing Asian population coming in, or other minorities? Are they growing, and are they tending conservative, or does it still slant overwhelmingly towards liberal Democrat?
There is some movement, and particularly with the Chinese, the Korean communities. We have about a million Koreans here in the state of California. We have even more Chinese immigrants, particularly in places like the San Francisco Bay Area, and they are becoming committed. They're very devoted with what the scriptures say and their beliefs and their convictions, non-compromising. There's many in the Latino community who also share these values and beliefs. The problem, though, with everyone, though, is that they're in public schools. Most of the kids, overwhelmingly, are in public schools, partly because the parents want their kids, especially if they've migrated here, they want their kids to learn English. But they have their kids in public schools, and these public schools are very heavy with the indoctrination now with regards to the LGBT causes, and that could be a whole other discussion of all the things that they're doing now with regards to the gay agenda as well as the transgender agenda. Just one quick example. Redwood Heights Elementary School in Oakland, just a few years ago, had transgenders come into a class of first graders and kindergartners to tell them how they could be a boy on the outside or a girl on the inside. They could be a boy, girl, both, or neither.
Mm-hmm.
And this confusing information, we at Pacific Justice Institute defended several parents who wanted to opt their kids out of it. But the overwhelming majority are being indoctrinated and confused, and it's just a huge crisis of against humanity.
Yeah, and I'm looking at an example. I know we're just about out of time, but I'm looking at an example from Minnesota. The parents of a 5-year-old co-transgender child have filed a complaint against the St. Paul Charter School. So
right.
When the boy shows up, he's wearing pink tennis shoes, and he wants to wear a jumper like the girls in the gym class and the other children. 5 years old, reportedly pointed and laughed at him. So the parents are upset, and they want the school to teach exclusively their agenda on sexuality. Again, it's cultural madness, and
parental negligence and abuse. As far as I'm concerned, it's horrific with the way they're probably dealing with this. If people want to keep up with this,
yes,
Dr. Brown, I encourage them strongly to go to our website. They can get our weekly Legal Insider update, and they'll find it very enlightening. It's very quality, and it's not real long. And they can also go to our like us on Facebook and get our information there. But pji.org, pji.org, P for Pacific, J for Justice, I for Institute.org. And I strongly encourage them to do that. And if they'd like to support the work we're doing across the United States to protect families and people of faith, they can do that as well at our website, pji.org.
My friends, go there right now, pji.org. Get the weekly updates. Stand behind Brad and the Pacific Justice Institute. I believe ultimately, sir, there are more with us than against us, and truth and sanity will prevail. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You have to be a very, very special person and a very, very special guest to make two appearances on the same day, on the same show here on the line of fire. If somehow you were listening earlier today in other parts of the country, from 2 to 2:30 Eastern Standard Time, I had on the air with me Scott Volk, one of my best friends in the world, and with whom we'll be doing our second ever Israel tour. And by then, who knows how many, but 21 so far for you. We'll be doing that together next year, February 25th to March 6th. So I said to Scott, hey, got a bunch of other listeners that tune in at this time. I want to get a couple minutes with you before we change subjects. So welcome back.
Thanks. What an amazing privilege to be on twice in one day.
Twice in one day, man. And think, I get to be on all the time, every day.
You're a privileged man.
It is. I feel very privileged. Scott, when you've led these tours over, people 21 times now, at what point do you see the light going on? At what point do they start to connect it? Because I'm thinking of one point on the tour,
yeah,
specifically, which is very early on.
Yeah.
But when do you see, because people travel, a little jet lagged and all that, nice hotel accommodations, everything great.
Right.
But, you know, it's going to be a full schedule. You wanted to get everything they can out of being there.
Yeah.
Do you think of, like, highlights with certain people or certain places?
Yeah, I remember one particular person weeping as we got off the plane and it said, "Welcome to Israel." They were undone. another person, you know, we'll start our trip. We'll land in Tel Aviv. We'll spend our first night on the Mediterranean Sea. Then we go up for 3 nights to the Sea of Galilee. Many times it's that boat ride on the Sea of Galilee when you're looking at the shoreline and the skyline that our Messiah actually looked at. I mean, there's not a whole lot of building going on around the Sea of Galilee. So knowing that Jesus himself was on that very sea, another outstanding example that I remember is on the Mount of Olives overlooking the city of Jerusalem, having a little time of prayer there and, you know, more than one person in our group just being overcome with emotion, realizing that this is the very place that Yeshua, Jesus, is going to come back and place his feet on that mountain. I mean, it's remarkable. Every place holds a memory.
And I remember that when I met up with the team, I had been in a little bit ahead of time, met up with the team in Tel Aviv, right off the plane, went straight over to meet with a Messianic Jewish believer.
Yes.
So many tours, they'll be going there for 100 years or 50, whatever, and they'll never connect with Jewish believers in the land, which is the oddest thing of all.
Very odd.
So we're able to do that right at the beginning.
Yes.
And then our dear friend there, Avi Mizrahi, talked about Tel Aviv, talked about the history of his grandparents, whoever it was, coming over from the country they came, and then just kind of gives you the panoramic view of Tel Aviv today, and you realize what in the world is, how did this place
Amazing.
Get built up, and eyes are open there. So listen, friends, as saying to Scott the first time around, when I promoted the trip, our first trip ever, which was almost 2 years ago, I was excited about it, but I thought, you know, you got to make a sizable investment to fly over and the whole tour and the packaging and all of that. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to be good. I didn't know how good it was going to be till we got there.
Yeah.
And because I've been involved with different things, stayed in different places, I was shocked at how good the accommodations were.
Yeah.
The food, every place was amazing. And the quality of the tour and the different things, the unique things was off the charts. And then the response of the people was totally off the charts. I thought, if I ever do this again, I'm going to tell everybody, you need to go. Yeah. If God provides,
Amen.
You need to go. 30 seconds, what would you say?
Yeah, well, we're really pushing for people to sign up. Anybody that signs up this week, bro, before midnight on Friday, we're giving $50 off of their registration fee. Any of your torchbearers that sign up will have a discount as well. I just really encourage people, if you have a heart for understanding the Bible, looking at the Bible from a real Hebraic perspective, join Dr. Brown and join me in Israel, February 25th through March 6th. The cost is $37.50. You don't want to miss it.
Wow. And friends, it's a great deal. Trust me on that. Go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown. Bring your whole family. Congregations come and lots of people, individuals come. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You'll see it right on the homepage, first or second banner that comes up. We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. It's an unavoidable subject these days, the issue of transgender activism, the issue of those who identify as contrary to their biological sex. What's the right response from society, from the church? What do we even know about this? The call to boycott Target, now 746,892 signatures. I don't even know if that's a week. And remember, men have now, this is videotaped, they have just walked in to Target, politely asked to talk to a manager and said, if I identify as a woman, can I use the ladies' room? Yes. Dressed like this? Yes. I can just go in there? Yes. I don't have to show you anything? No. If you identify, that's what you can do. If the ladies have a problem, then have them talk to us. We'll deal with their complaints. It's turned the world upside down. I'm privileged to have on the air with me Chris Doyle. He's been a guest before. He leads Voice of the Voiceless. He is a professional counselor and himself a man who came out of homosexuality and is happily married, raising a family, and is not just concerned about social justice. He really cares about the people involved as a counselor and as a Christian. Chris, welcome to The Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be back, Dr. Brown. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. Chris, let's just talk about the science of this. Is there, aside from someone with a rare biological or chromosomal disorder, is there a way to test, a scientific, provable, demonstrable way to test if someone is actually a man in a woman's body or vice versa, or is it all a matter of perception?
No. There is no science out there that says that people who were born this way have done so by birth, or that there's some kind of genetic abnormality. What we do know is that those who experience gender dysphoria, or what was previously called gender identity disorder, now been taken out of the DSM and it's replaced by gender dysphoria, which basically means, hey, if you're distressed by your gender confusion, then that's the problem, not the actual gender confusion. And that's just, by the way, this is exactly what they did to homosexuality.
Yes.
From 1973, they removed it and replaced it with ego dystonic homosexuality, which is basically, hey, if you're distressed by your homosexuality, that's the problem. You're distressed, not the actual condition. So we see this is what the APA is leading to, and it wouldn't be surprising if they, the next edition of the diagnostic manual, that is completely removed. And this is done so purely by politics, not by sound science or a good public policy. And this is what I said in my article, that's published in the Christian Post, is that the LGBT lobby is not doing those who experience this issue any favors. And by promoting public policy, which enables people who are struggling with this issue or identify as transgenders to live out that way, this is not a healthy lifestyle, folks. This is not. And we say this with the most sincere compassion, knowing, Dr. Brown, that I am broken just like you are. We're all sexually broken, okay? But we are called to tell the truth, and the truth is that this is a sin that's leading to death. Over 40% of those who pursue sexual reassignment surgery will commit suicide. This is a public health crisis, and the fact that we're not promoting common sense solutions when it comes to this issue from a restroom perspective is absolute insanity. And, you know, this is so interesting. I spoke to a group of Latino leaders over the weekend, and I quoted Camille Paglia, who is a lesbian feminist, and she talks about this a few years ago on the Dennis Prager show, but she uses this phrase, we have now entered into a period of psychological stupidity, where we're not allowed to say what makes sense, what is apparent from our biology, which is we're created male and female. And you see the LGBT lobby enabling these people out there to do this and mutilate themselves. And this is the most uncompassionate thing we can imagine, yet it's being masked in love and tolerance. And this is not love. This is absolute insanity.
Yeah, so think of telling a young woman she's perfectly healthy, her body is functioning fine, God made her in his wonderful design. She has the capabilities of reproduction. She has the capabilities of doing something no man can ever do, conceiving, carrying a child, nursing that child, and she's now told the solution to her psychological issues is to have her breasts removed, to have her reproductive organs removed, to be restructured as best as possible to be a male without ever fully being male, and then to be on hormones for the rest of her life. That's the solution? How can it possibly be that we've come to that?
Well, listen, we live in a society, and I wrote this in my article, we live in the most compassionate, tolerant society in the world where such a thing is allowed, meaning that we're not making it illegal, even though it's obviously harmful for many. But let's just make sure that we get this debate correct, all right? You can do whatever you want in the United States of America, essentially. You know, I mean, you could do almost whatever you want as long as you're not causing harm to another person. But for the psychological community to essentially say that the acceptable treatment response for someone who's going through gender dysphoria is to simply transition their gender identity into another person is simply wrong. You know, if that is the ultimate conclusion, that a person that goes through counseling and sincerely does their therapeutic work, that's their ultimate conclusion, that they believe that this is right for them and they want to go through that, okay, right? But we should be really encouraging people to look at the underlying factors and the possible trauma that's causing someone to feel this way. And we're not. And it's so irresponsible. And that's why we've entered in this period of psychological stupidity, where we are so afraid to question that maybe there's something not right going on here, and that we're so, you know, quite honestly, wimpy, and we want to dance around the, you know, tiptoe around the tulips and make people feel good about themselves when ultimately this is causing them harm. What is wrong with us in America that we're not telling the truth anymore?
Yeah, it's the great question. It's almost as if we drank the corporate Kool-Aid. I just had Brad Dacus on with me a few minutes ago from Pacific Justice Institute, and they're dealing with cases in California where it is the law that the boy can play on the girl's sports team and use the girl's locker room and shower stalls. And you've actually had that happening with a boy identifying as a girl, and he can just go in and say, I identify as a girl, that's who I am now. And then, as you know, the large majority of those who identify as transgender don't at the same time identify as gay. So in other words, Bruce Jenner is still attracted to women.
Right,
so
exactly.
Why do you want Bruce Jenner in the women's locker room? So again, it is.
And what it's doing is it's sexualizing a place like the bathroom or the locker room in a place that's not supposed to be sexualized. Okay. And this is the problem, is that, you know, listen, I'm so compassionate for the struggle of those who have this issue, okay? Whether they believe it's a struggle or not, okay? I'm compassionate for them. And in the United States, we accommodate people because it's the right thing to do. There is unisex bathrooms in almost every restaurant now, or at least the majority of restaurants. If you go to a community pool, you know, a lot of times there's a unisex changing room, and there's facilities to help people with this issue. And so, but the problem is that the LGBT lobby does not really care about people. Mm-hmm. This is a political agenda, and it's coming from the same people who are essentially trying to take away the therapy rights of also children who are gender confused. And you see many of these laws that have already passed throughout the United States and in a handful of states have also outlawed therapy for children who are gender confused, who want to go back to their biological gender, or for parents who want a counselor to talk to their kids who are confused and say, hey, maybe there's a little bit more to the story than you're not looking at. You know, they're outlawing therapy as well.
Yeah.
So we see very clear what the LGBT lobby's goal here is. It's complete indoctrination. It is not freedom. It's you believe what we want you to believe, or we're going to eliminate you. And this is what they're trying to do throughout the United States in all these legal cases where you have people who have conscience rights objections to gay marriages and different types of things around sexual identity. And we're really turning into a Marxist society here, is what we're doing, is we're no longer allowed to disagree, you know, compassionately and respectfully. It's if you don't agree with us, then you must be eliminated.
Exactly. As I said over a decade ago, those who came out of the closet want to put us in the closet. And because of that, LGBT activism has become the principal threat to freedom of religion, speech, and conscience in America. And it's mind-boggling. So little Sammy, he's 7 years old. He's confused. He really feels like he's a girl. You can now bring him for counseling, and they might say, okay, when he gets to be 8 or 9, we're going to put him on hormone blockers to stop the onset of puberty. And then when he gets into his teen years, we'll start to counsel about sex change surgery. And then as soon as possible, we want to do that. That is legal. Dr. Paul McHugh from Johns Hopkins said that's child abuse.
It's absolutely insane. The American College of Pediatricians came out with a report a couple weeks ago, essentially labeling what that is, and it's child abuse. Okay. Because children aren't in a position to really understand the ramifications of that type of behavior on their long-term effects. And by the way, I am not the type of counselor out there that says that children, you know, who are struggling with homosexuality or gender identity must go through a process where they, you know, they go back to either heterosexuality or their inherent biology. I just think that we should be able to talk about it. Imagine that.
Imagine that.
Okay.
And right now,
And this is the craziness, right?
And that's I just got to jump in. That's what's illegal. Chris, a qualified, certified counselor in California would not be allowed to talk to that kid to say, let's try to find a solution for Sammy's problem. All right, I want you to know how to connect with Chris. Stay with me.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Delighted to be speaking with Chris Doyle. Chris, I want to try to cover three things quickly if we can. But first, how do folks connect with you, what you're doing? You've written some great stuff for Christian Post. Your voice is always compassionate, clear-headed. It's professional from a scientific viewpoint. It's Christian in terms of compassion and truth. How do folks connect with you?
Yeah, if they want to connect on the therapy issue, you know, we do family and individual counseling for people all over the world. I mean, and also in person in the Washington, D.C. area. InstituteForHealthyFamilies.org, InstituteForHealthyFamilies.org. And if they're interested in political, we do lobbying and our therapy rights issue through EqualityAndJusticeForAll.org.
All right. We'll give those once more before we're done. Okay. Very quickly, and I know you could get into great, great depth in these things, but someone that's struggling with gender identity issues, you've spoken to people like as such, you've counseled them. What kind of agony have they lived with?
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, in my experience, and I've counseled, you know, not many, but, you know, a handful of these individuals over the last few years. They experience a lot of emotional and psychological and other types of trauma. A lot of times what I've seen is deep rejection from the same gender parent. Sometimes the same gender parent or same sex parent is not even in the picture. And then they're oftentimes gender nonconforming, meaning that boys are a little bit more feminine and girls are a little bit more masculine. So from a very young age, because of these characteristics, they have a hard time fitting in with their peers. And there's a lot of bullying and rejection and a lot of trauma. And this is all trauma. And you know, the person who experiences the transgender identity or gender dysphoria has typically a huge background of trauma. And, you know, in order to resolve that, we've got to resolve that trauma. We have great technology now through things like EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy, which, by the way, has been very effective for people who have gone through major traumas like war and rape. But it's great for emotional trauma. We use it all the time. This is something that individuals need to really experience in order to experience healing. But there's certainly a background of trauma, and you know, unfortunately, the politically correct society is saying, well, they're just born the wrong gender. You know, that's all it is. Well, come on, really? Have you ever talked to someone who experiences this issue? There's way more that's going on there. You know, and so, you know, we need to be intellectually honest here and really talk about the facts. And unfortunately, that's being hidden with this political agenda.
But what we often hear, though, from trans activists and others is once they've had the hormone therapy and some cases the sex change surgery, they're so much happier and well adjusted and life is so much more wonderful if people weren't so transphobic. But yeah. Statistics and anecdotal evidence tells us something very different.
Yeah, I just don't think that, you know, society prejudice is going to cause over 40% of people that go through sexual reassignment surgery to commit suicide. I just don't buy it. It doesn't make sense to me. You know, I've experienced prejudice for my sexual identity. You know, I understand what it's like. You know, it's not easy. And believe me, I'm extremely compassionate towards those who struggle with these issues. But there's something internal that's going on inside of the person with this struggle that needs to be processed and resolved. It's not simply about this external bias and discrimination. I just don't buy it.
Yeah, and think if there was a way to, let's say someone had gangrene in their body. I just want to use a totally physical illustration. They had gangrene. It was in their hands. It was spreading to their arms. And if you didn't amputate the arms, the person was going to die. If there was actually a cure for gangrene and a way to reverse it, that would be the better course of action. But yet we're not even allowed to look for a better course of action. Chris, last thing, in your Christian Post article, you had a common sense, compassionate solution, telling companies like PayPal, rather than boycott states like North Carolina, what should they do?
No, it's just so simple. You know, these businesses could start up a fund out of their own profits, right? And simply install unisex bathrooms in every single public facility in the state in order to really be compassionate on for those who struggle with this issue. I mean, it's so simple, but we can understand that this really isn't the solution they want because, of course, PayPal does business in countries where homosexual and transgender behavior is illegal.
To the point of death. Yeah.
So it's complete hypocrisy on their part. You know, they don't really want, they don't really care about the transgender community. They care about the almighty dollar. And the LGBT lobby has them wrapped around their hands, ladies and gentlemen. And that is why you see companies boycotting. It's not because of people. It's because of politics.
Yeah, because if it was because of people and because of moral stands, they wouldn't be in Saudi Arabia and they wouldn't be in China and they wouldn't be in Cuba and they wouldn't be in numerous other countries where treatment of homosexual men or women or those who identify as transgender could literally not just be jail sentence, but it could be execution.
If that happens, unfortunately, it's terrible, but it happens. And so they're not taking a stand over anything, believe me.
Yeah, and unfortunately, because now we're told to celebrate this issue as opposed to look at it as something that needs attention and help. So Bruce Jenner is Woman of the Year. We should celebrate that. Many don't want a unisex bathroom. They don't. That would be discriminating against Bruce Jenner because he should use the ladies' room. So what about the rest of the population that struggles? And what about the fact that once you let a trans-identified person in the ladies' bathroom, how do you distinguish that person who may mean
well,
no harm?
Well, this is what I talked about in the article. This is completely irresponsible. You know, with love and equality comes responsibility and boundaries.
Yes.
And I ask this question, does the LGBT lobby really care about anyone besides their own political agenda? Do they have any care about children who might be traumatized by a transgender person that is exposing themselves? I mean, I'm not saying that that's happening every day, but it possibly could happen. Or from a transgender person like Bruce Jenner, who's still attracted to the same set, you know, to the opposite sex and is making advances. Or for just the ordinary pervert that walks in that says, hey, I identify as a woman, and therefore I get to use your facilities. You know, this is not safe. This is not responsible. We have to have boundaries in our society. And you know what? It's not unreasonable to have a common sense solution if we're really talking about common sense solutions. But if we're talking about politics and political agenda, then you must accept my solution or you're a homophobe and bigot. And that's what the message is.
And we must stand strong, support people like Chris, enable people like Chris to do what they're doing for righteousness and keep speaking out and doing the right thing until culture returns to sanity. Chris, once more, if folks want to connect with you for counseling, where do they go?
InstituteForHealthyFamilies.org, and if you're interested in following our hashtag therapy equality movement, it's equalityandjusticeforall.org, just like the Pledge of Allegiance.
Awesome. Hey, Chris, you're doing a great job. We appreciate your voice. We need to keep hearing it. God bless you.
God bless, Dr. Brown. Thanks.
All right. Friends, nothing to add to that. Everything's been spoken with great clarity. And if you know Chris, with great compassion. He does care. He's a counselor. Cares about people. All right. You say, what do I do? I'm frustrated. Okay. Make sure you're getting our articles because you can share these with others. Make sure you're getting the articles, writing 3 to 5 new articles a week. We're putting out 2, 3, sometimes even more new videos every week. And of course, 10 hours of radio content. Be equipped, be edified. God's kingdom continues to advance. Jesus remains Lord. Now's the time for us to be heard and to take a stand. My bottom line today, sanity will not return into our culture until the church leads the way.